In the first chapter of the book of Genesis, we are told that we were created in his image and after his likeness. When we think about that, what we are understanding is that God has given us our mental, our emotional, and our spiritual attributes. Our ability to think and reason, our ability to judge and make assessments is all based on the ability that God has given to each one of us to be in his image and after his likeness. Unfortunately, after Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, that image was marred. Selfishness took deep root within the hearts of men, and many things have changed. We read in Genesis chapter 6 that every imagination of the thoughts of men's hearts were only evil continually, that the earth was filled with violence, that God was grieved that he had made man, and that man had taken the opportunity to become such a terrible, terrible individual. This, of course, continues from generation to generation. Some generations are very closely aligned with God and his thinking. They are merciful, they are compassionate, they are loving, they are gentle, they are kind. Other generations have become much more fierce, more violence, more lack of care and concern for others, less natural affection. And in the midst of this, of course, is our responsibility to keep ourselves above the wicked conduct of the Gentiles, about the darkening of their hearts and about the things that they think and that they reason with, and we have to keep ourselves above that. And that's really what this lesson is about this evening. We're going to be talking about abortion. I mentioned this morning that I felt that the time had become near enough that this is becoming very important, and I don't like this topic. I don't like preaching on things that are so disgusting. I took some time this afternoon to look at abortion again because I hadn't looked at it in a long time. I was going to go ahead and put it into the notes, exactly what the procedures were. I read the first procedure. I got so sick, I just said to myself, they can look it up themselves. It's a terrible thing that we are doing to these unborn children. And the emotions that would lead someone to think or to ignore what they're doing to another person is the selfishness and the self-centeredness that we have to focus on. When we're talking about human sophistry and human wisdom, we can see that they are very adept at making good things evil and evil things good. They are very good at putting darkness for light and light for darkness and bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And in this particular case, I think that the entire nation has been sold a terrible, terrible lie. And we're going to talk about that as the lesson proceeds. And I'm not going to be dealing with the political side. I hope none of you thought this morning when I made those comments. The only reason I did that is because I want to put into perspective what people are saying in other realms and in other realms of law and what Jesus is saying. But this evening we're going to stay with the scriptures except for a few brief discussions about what is actually going on with abortion. But I want to begin with the passage of scripture that we go to a lot, and it's something we need to stop and think about because relabeling is a very common occurrence with Satan and with the wicked generations that come and go. So what he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 is that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who come after. So I think it's a legitimate question. Is abortion new? Is it something that has never been conceived of before? Is it something that we as scientific and medically oriented people, we are discussing something that's not in the scriptures? We are dealing with something that has never been before. And that's how they want to couch it. That's how they want to express it is there's nothing in the scriptures to deal with this. And I would say that is not true. As a matter of fact, he says in verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. So can we find abortion in the ancient times before us? And so the method and the means is new. There's no question about that. There's no indication at all that man had the technology or the ability to enter into the womb and take the life of an unborn child before the child sees the light of day. We use the technology of science and medicine to enter the womb while the woman is asleep and unaware, and the deed is done before birth and many times before anyone even has a chance to be aware of what actually occurred, except for the people who are actually doing the procedure. And so this is what we see. So, but as I mentioned, if you want to make yourself sick, read the details of abortion. Just sit down this afternoon, go to your internet, and just write, how do people abort their children? And basically, this is right out of the internet. This is as far as I went. There are three abortion classifications: surgical abortion, medical abortion, and chemical abortion. Now, first of all, the word abortion is what we might call a euphemism. It's a wonderful term that doesn't really convey exactly what's going on, because essentially what we have is we have a life in the womb that will, after a certain period of time, become a child, and the abortion ends that life. The abortion puts the life to the end. And so that's really what abortion is, and essentially the life of the child is taken from. Now, I won't argue with people. They want to exchange child for fetus. They want to exchange child or life for life hasn't yet begun. But the point is, they are poisoned, suctioned out of the womb, cut into pieces and removed, or forcefully pulled from the womb and left to die. Now, that's as far as I want to go with this. They are either something is injected into them that kills them, or a tube is put in there and whatever's in there is just suctioned out and turned into mush. Or they go in with a pair of scissors or a knife or something and they stop the life. Then they cut it up and take it out. And again, the more detailed you go, the more sickening and disgusting that it becomes. But this essentially is what abortion is. Now, as I said, the method is new. You can't go back and find people in Rome who were going to the doctor and the doctor was putting them to sleep and they were entering into the womb and they were putting the child to death. So from that perspective, the method and the means is new, but the result is always the same. You had a life that was to become a child, and that life has been removed, and now that child or that life is ended, or the individual has been put to death. And we'll get into the spiritual aspects of this a little bit later in the lesson as to when God actually puts life into the womb. But they used the fire inside of the idol, or they exposed them. I found that an interesting term. I looked it up this afternoon. I thought, okay, I want to see, what did Rome do with their children? Did Rome ever do this? And what they did is they had a place in the town where you would take your child. Now, if you didn't like your child, you'd leave your child naked there and hope that it died. But if it wasn't, then you would leave the child there, bundled up, and hope that someone would come along and turn them into their slave or turn them into something else, and that someone else would take the child. They really didn't care about the child. Many of these children went on to become or put into prostitution or slavery or many other things. But if you didn't want your child, no, you couldn't go to the doctor before the child was born, but you could do exactly the same thing after the child was born. And the only difference is in the time period. Instead of the 4 to 6 weeks or the 8 to 12 weeks or the full term where we try to stop the life before the child comes out into the world. Although recently, I think we've all begun to see that in some of the states, they have begun to say that even if the child is born alive, we still have the right to put that child to death. And that's caused a lot of people. But you start to see, again, the fallacy of the human sophistry when you see the child has the ability to live outside of the womb, and they still say, no, that child is not a child, and that child needs to be put to death. And so, but they expose them. They did exactly the same thing. They would throw them from high places. And I put that number in here just for you to think about. That's how many abortions there have been since 1973. 61 million. 61 million individuals who would have been born if they'd just been allowed to stay in that womb for a few more months, who would have been born, who would have been in our midst, who would have been different people doing different things, but their existence was brought to an end. And I'm trying to be careful how I use my terminology here, because we want to deal with, again, the human sophistry that is dealt with. In Deuteronomy 12, verse 29 through 31, God says this: "When the Lord your God casts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, 'How did this nation serve their gods?' I also will do likewise. You shall not..." Whoops. I don't know where that came from. Let's just jump to verse 31. "You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination to the Lord, which he hates, they have done to their gods. For they burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods." Every abomination to the Lord. The word abomination means something that makes God want to throw up. The word abomination means something that makes God disgusted, and it defiles people, and he gives as one of them the desire that they had to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. "For this city has been to me a provocation of my anger and my fury from the day that they built it even to this day. So I will remove it from before my face because of all the evil of the children of Israel and the children of Judah, which they have done to provoke me to anger. They, their kings, their princes, their priests, their prophets, the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, they have turned to me the back and not the face. Though I taught them rising up early and teaching them, yet they have not listened to receive instruction, but they have set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to defile it. And they have built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire to Molech, which I did not command them, nor did it come into my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin." The methods are different. The result is the same. They had to wait for the child to be born, and then they would take that child and they would put that child to death. We can do it before they're born. We have the technology to go into the womb, but if you look at the procedures they use to kill, they poison, they cut, they destroy, they puree, or they pull out, and they allow them to just lie there and die. Or, again, some of the things that I read today I don't even want to say. But God says, "This infuriates me. It infuriates me that you would take the children that I have given you." These, how many people did I say? 61 million people who could be here today, but are not here because they have been sacrificed to the gods of fornication and pleasure and lack of responsibility. And brethren, that's really the only answer here. The answer is that people do not have natural affection. That is a child. And it is the child of the mother, but that mother doesn't care about that child. That mother doesn't want the responsibility of that child. That mother does not have any mercy or natural affection or any desire or interest. That child to them is only a right and an option which they are exercising not to get involved in. Well, how is that any different than what these people were doing? These people would take their living children to this idol. They would light a fire in the belly of the idol, and then they would roll the children down into the belly of the child. And yes, that seems more barbaric, but it really isn't if you read exactly what goes on in abortion. The only difference is, as I say, it's done in a medical facility, and nobody sees it but the people who are involved. And I kind of drew a conclusion this afternoon that people who are involved in this activity are very barbaric. I just don't see how they could do it. I don't see how they can take lives like they are doing. "When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire." Now, you might want to argue, well, abortion is not having them pass through the fire. Well, tell me what the difference is. The only difference is the timing, the place, and the method. But the result is the same. You had a child. That child was going to be your child. You were going to raise that child. You were going to care for that child. You didn't want that responsibility, so you decided to end the life of that child. Now, I don't want to call it a child. I want to call it a fetus. I don't want to call it murder. I want to call it an abortion. But the sad reality is that that's sophistry, and that's just calling good evil and evil good. There is no possible way for you and I to be able to make the kind of arguments that people are making today regarding these things, because God has made himself abundantly clear on this matter. He defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fire to Moloch. It wasn't just the idolatry, it was the murder that the idolatry approved of. That was the real problem here. Now, the cause and effect is always the same. People want to commit fornication and adultery. Now, if you don't have fornication and adultery, you don't have unwanted children. If you don't have unwanted children, you don't have any need for an abortion. So those 61 million people are the mute testimony. By mute, I mean it's an unspoken testimony that people are committing fornication and adultery, and they're having children that they don't want to have. People that are married and want to have children are not thinking about abortion, unless, and we'll get it, well, we won't get into that this evening, but we'll get into it at another time. The lack of mercy that someone would say, well, if the child isn't going to be easy for me to raise, then I'd rather have that child put to death and I'll try again. And what right do we have as humans to do that? What right do we have to take a gift that God has given us? Yes, we live in a sin-cursed world, and yes, people are born without all of the abilities and all the opportunities that other people have, but who should get to make that decision? You know, when we talk about illegal immigration, or when we talk about other issues where one class of people is less better off than other classes of people, we don't talk the same way. We're not going to practice genocide when it comes to a group of people that we think are less, but we do practice it when there are children that we think are less. If the child does not meet our criteria of what should be, then we have no problem putting that child to death. Now, that's not very far from, if they're not the race we want, if they're not the social status that we want, then we'll do that. There's not, if you look at the arguments that Hitler was making regarding the things that he wanted to do with certain classes of people, with the arguments that people are making today regarding these unborn children, you're going to see that although the principles are slightly different, and maybe our emotions aren't kindled as much, and maybe we are not as outraged as we should be, but the reality is that there isn't very much different there. The product of fornication and adultery is unwanted children. And idolatry is based on both of these things. This is what would happen. You don't think the children of Israel just said, you know, that Baal looks like a good thing to worship. I think I want to worship Baal. No, they wanted to commit fornication, or they wanted to commit adultery, and that idolatrous religion sanctioned it. So it wasn't really the worship of the idols that they wanted per se. It was the activities that the idols approved of that God didn't approve of. God did not approve of fornication and adultery. God did not approve human sacrifice. He didn't approve of these things. And so the people had to find another way to worship. And that's the problem we're running into today. Now, the practice of adultery and fornication is approved, and the means to remove unwanted children is approved. That's what idolatry is. That's why people like idolatry. Like people like denominations over the Church of Christ. It's not so much, oh, I think being a Baptist or a Mormon or Presbyterian makes me happier than being a member of the Church of Christ. That's never what it is. Or even people leave the Church of Christ is because they don't like the confining rules that are held from the Scriptures, and they want to find a group of people who, uttering great swelling words of vanity, will give them the ability to let go of those rules. So if I want to be a drunkard, I can become a member of certain churches, like the Catholic Church. I remember in St. Louis while I was there, that the beer companies would actually advertise on the church site for their Oktoberfest. And they would all come together and they would all get drunk. And that's a religion that people who like to get drunk want to be a part of. They don't want to be a part of the church, where the truth is that alcohol is sinful and evil and wicked, and we shouldn't have any part of it. Well, if I love the truth, I'm willing to make the sacrifice and give up the alcohol. But if I don't love the truth, that's why I'm going to become a Catholic. I'm not going to become a Catholic because somehow I like it better. I'm not going to become an idolater because I like it better. I'm going to become an idolater, or I'm going to change my religion because they're offering things I want to do that I can't do if I stay in the confines of the Scripture. And that's exactly what the Jews were dealing with. So again, there's nothing new under the sun. The names have been changed, but the motives and the practices are exactly the same. And that's where we're at in our culture today. The culture has changed its religious convictions. The turn of the century, before evolution took hold, most of the religious convictions in our country would veer away from these things. But as a result of evolution, as a result of this concept that there is no God, that the Bible is not God's word, and that we don't have to worry about these things, and that we're really here, then people start making their own rules. And it was just a foregone conclusion that this would occur, that we would do that. But if you think about it, 61 million people have been put to death just because they hadn't been born yet. But if we'd left them alone, they would have been allowed to be born. And yet, somehow or another, that's not the same as what the Jews were doing. Here's how God expressed himself. Unless we think, well, idolatry and human sacrifice are linked together. No, they're not. Let's look at this verse. Moreover, you took your sons and your daughters, whom you bore to me, and these you have sacrificed to them to be devoured. Were your acts of harlotry a small matter, that you have slain my children and offered them up to them by causing them to pass through the fire? And in all your abominations and acts of harlotry, you did not remember the days of your youth. You see that God calls these abominations and acts of harlotry. Yes, he did not appreciate the fact that they took their children and offered them to these idols, but he also did not appreciate the fact that the gift of these children, he said, they were my children, and you offered them up. And in all your abominations and acts of harlotry, you did not remember the days of your youth when you were naked and bare and struggling in your blood. Well, this, of course, is the citing the parable where God says, I found you in the wilderness and I raised you up, and then you became this kind of a woman. Well, the simple matter and the simple point is, there is nothing new under the sun. And that everything that abortion is doing today is what these things were being done back then. And the only difference is timing. The only difference is medical science, if you want to call it medical science. But the point and the problem is that these 61 million abortions ended the lives of 61 million people, and that's murder. Abortion is murder. There's no other name for it. It is the taking of a life, and it's just human sophistry. Well, it's not a life yet. What do you mean it's not a life yet? What is it? Well, it's a fetus. Well, what is a fetus? Well, a fetus is an unborn child. A fetus is, if left alone, going to become an infant. And there's no way for science to break that chain. If you leave that fetus alone, it becomes a human being. And the problem is that God has placed within that womb human life, not animal life. We don't have evolution. It's not an evolving animal that becomes a human being. That's how people like to look at it. Well, just like I was a monkey and now I'm a man, this fetus has moves through the process of being an animal and then ultimately becomes a man. And only when it's out of the womb and has taken its first breath does it have any of the rights that everyone else in the world has regarding due process and regarding the life and rights of people who are born. The Constitution states that we all have the right to the pursuit of happiness. We all have the right to live. But these unborn children don't have that right. That's what the Supreme Court has decreed, that until a certain period of time, they have no rights. Now, when that was said about people of races 100 years ago, people were outraged. But no one seems to be outraged over the fact that these unborn children don't have an advocate. And the people who are advocating for them are being mistreated and looked down upon and actually maligned and viewed as subhuman by the people who want to be involved in this. And that's where we're seeing the problem. And I think if we start preaching this lesson and we start teaching these things to other people, we may find that same hatred and that same persecution coming. But I've looked at this from every possible angle, and I cannot see that it's new. It's not new. It's exactly what they were doing. You commit fornication, you commit adultery, or you get involved in an activity and you have an unwanted child. Don't want it. It's not a question of whether it's a child or not. It's a question of whether it's wanted or not. If it's wanted, it's a child. If it's not wanted, it's not a child. If a woman has the child and then buries the child or kills the child, we're outraged. But if she can get to the doctor 3 days before and have the doctor do it for her, then we are not outraged. What kind of thinking is that? Where is the disconnect here? And again, it comes back to one simple thing. Woe unto those who call evil good and good evil, and woe unto those who put darkness for light and light for darkness. The sad reality is, if we make the same exact applications for other people that we are for these unborn, we would be outraged. And if we make the same applications to the newborn as we do to the unborn, we would be outraged. But somehow we've been sold this bill of goods that if they're not born yet, they have no rights, they are not human. Well, what are they if they're not human? They're born human. Are they not conceived human? Are they animals and then they become men? Where is it that it occurs? And of course, we know where it occurs. It occurs in the womb. It occurs at the time of conception. But know this, that in the last days, grievous times will come. We've come full circle. We are right back in the same human sacrifice conundrum that all of these ancient civilizations have. We've just cloaked it in technology. We've just cloaked it in science and in medicine. And we've cloaked it in the operating rooms of hospitals and in various places where they do these procedures. But if you could shine the light of truth on what actually occurs in that room, grievous times are here. For men shall be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, haughty, railers, disobedient to people, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection. I remember when Jeannie had her pregnancy test and we were going to have a baby, and I just all smiles. And I'm sure all of you felt the same way when your first child came along. It was the most exciting opportunity, the most exciting blessing from God. It was one of the gifts that God had given. Now, if we hadn't been married yet and we didn't want that child, now... But what's the problem? Is the problem the child, or is the problem the natural affection that should have come? Is the problem the child or the grievous times? Is the problem the child or the selfishness? Implacable, slanderers, without self-control, fierce. You know, when you read about what these people are doing inside of that room to those unborn, and some of them still are already looking like children, these people are fierce. No lovers of good, traitors, headstrong, puffed up, lovers of pleasure, rather than lovers of God. There is no question whatsoever if we leave that child alone, that child will grow up to become a man or a woman. And they have every right to grow up and become a man or a woman. So what these things are telling us is that grievous times shall come. Now, what I find amazing over the last few months is to see these people arguing that should the child come through the abortion procedure alive and intact, we should still have the right to put that thing to death. It's out of the womb now, looks like every other child that's been born in the womb. Premature, yes, but it still looks like a child. No, we should throw it in a bucket and let it drown or let it die or put it to death. And that should be the law of the land. And it is the law of the land in a few of the states that we would call liberal states, which are ruled by liberal people who are fierce and who have these attributes, because you listen to them talk. And if you could just exchange fetus for child, and if you could just exchange abortion for murder, I think we'd pretty well have it right. And it's an amazing and a sad situation that we're dealing with. Now, we're told that only in cases of rape or incest or to save the life of the mother, and this has become the rallying cry, and that's why people were so upset, because Alabama just passed a law this week or last week where even those cases are no longer valid. And saving the life of the mother is an agonizing decision for the husband and the wife to make, whether or not they want to save the child's life or their life. I don't consider that to be murder. I consider that to be an awful, terrible situation. But here's God's answer regarding rape and incest. Fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor children put to death for their fathers. A person shall be put to death for his own sin. That person in that womb, from rape or incest, is that a child or not? And when we start human sophistry, well, this person shouldn't be allowed to live because the mother didn't want that. That was rape. Well, what's the child in the womb got to do with rape? Now, I can certainly see if a woman said, I want to put that child up for adoption, I could understand that. I don't know if it was a Christian and they were coming to me and saying, do you think I should do this or not? I don't know what my answer would be. I'd have to sit down and talk to them and think about it. But there's a huge difference in allowing someone to continue to live and in murdering them because they were born under circumstances that we don't agree with or we don't approve of. And again, this is human sophistry. It's what I call bait and switch. Even if we could conclude, I think I read today that there were 3,000 births this year that were rape and incest, and over 1 million abortions. So the proportions, even if this were an argument, which I don't consider that it would be, but it still would not justify. But to me, that's a child. And whatever crime brought that child into the world should not allow us to put that child to death. A father shall not be put to death for their children, nor shall children be put to death for their father. So God's already given me the answer for that. And he's also said, you shall not murder. And he's also said, you can't solve a problem with sin. You can't do evil that good may come. So this argument, no matter how much our compassions go out to this young girl who's been raped or this young girl who's been the victim of an incest, and now she has to have a child, and that child is going to be born. So now we go in and we kill the child, and somehow that's going to solve the problem? Somehow by murder, somehow by doing evil, good is going to come? And of course the answer to that is absolutely not. We don't have that right. We are this is a side of life that we just don't have any right to be involved in. Now, the wonder of birth is described by God in Psalm 139, and it's fascinating because he makes it very clear that God knew even before conception that this child was going to be born and that this child was going to have this many years. And that means he knows every abortion. He knows that child's life is going to be taken. But that child had a life that we cut short. But as this psalmist writes, unfortunately, he was allowed to be born and write these things. A lot of these people are not being allowed to be born and think these things. But you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. Now notice that. Me. Remember what Peter said? I'm going to put off my tabernacle. I am not my tabernacle. This man says, you covered me in my mother's womb. What does that mean? It means that the body is just the covering, but the individual is already there. And that's certainly true of John the Baptist. That was certainly true of Jeremiah. That was certainly true of Paul. That was certainly true of Jesus. They were formed, but their soul, who they were, their essence was already there before the body was actually formed. So if John the Baptist had been an abortion, or Jesus had been an abortion, or Jeremiah had been an abortion, would that not be murder? Since God knew what they were going to be and he clothed them and had plans for them? You formed me. You formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows right well. My frame was not hidden from you Now again, he separates the individual from the body. The individual is a person. The individual is an I. It's a me. It's an individual. Just like Jesus, just like John, just like Paul. They were people. I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. My substance. I was there. The substance came later. This is human sophistry that somehow we are not a person until the body's actually formed. God says the soul is already there. The life force is already there. Jesus did not enter into his body when he was born. He entered into the womb. He was in the womb. If he had been aborted, it would have been a murder. Why is it any different for anyone else? Verse 16, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. And in your book, they were all written. The days fashioned for me, when as yet there was none of them. So we see that birth and conception is much more sublime, much more complicated than we know. As we know from Hebrews, we have a father of a spirit and we have the fathers of our flesh. The spirit comes from God and the spirit returns to the God who gave it. When does the spirit enter into the womb? The spirit is part of our life. The soul, the spirit, you can't separate it. Men want to separate it. The spirit doesn't come till later. It's the soul. The soul is the life force, and we can end that. But the spirit, that which is in the image and likeness of God, that doesn't come until after they're born. How in the world could they know that? And how can they refute what God says here? God knows when he puts the soul into the womb. And it's at the moment of conception as life begins. And when life ends, that baby dies. And many people look at a miscarriage, not as a miscarriage, not as an abortion, but as the death of the child that they wanted to have. Why do they see it that way? Because they want it. And somehow, if you don't want it, it's not a person. It doesn't have any rights. But this verse destroys that argument. This verse completely destroys it because he says in verse 14, in verse 13, you have covered me in my mother's womb. He was already there. And as I say, you say, well, how do you know for sure that, Alan? Well, I know it because God has said a couple of things about that. If men strive together and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart. Now again, notice, with child, not with fetus, with child. The fruit depart, that means the child comes out of the womb, but no harm falls. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean, well, the mother didn't get hurt, but the baby died. That wasn't any harm. Not if it's my baby that I want. If I want the baby and two men are fighting and they hit my wife and my wife has a miscarriage and the baby dies, harm came. Harm followed. I lost my child. He shall surely be fined according as the woman's husband lay upon him. He shall pay. But if any harm follow, then you shall give life for life. How are you going to prove that that's only talking about the mother? That that's not talking about the child? God said, children are mine. God said, I formed them in the womb. And as the man said, you clothed me. I was there. And these two men stopped that. So what should happen? Well, life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand. Just the woman? Obviously not. So when does life begin? Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations. I challenge you, brethren, you tell me, when did that person become a person? According to Jeremiah, it was before he was born. Because God already had the spirit set apart, put it into the womb before it was born. It was already decreed. It was already determined. Same thing is true with John the Baptist. Then she spoke out with a loud voice and said, blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. But why is this granted to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For indeed, as soon as the voice of your greeting sounded in my ears, the babe leaped in my womb for joy. John was conceived 6 months before Jesus was conceived. Scriptures are very clear about that. that it was in her sixth month. So she's in her sixth month, and the babe is leaping in her womb for joy. So there's no way that you can say it's not till after they're born. This child was not born for another 3 months. And yet, he's a babe. He leaps in the womb for joy. And God says, I formed you in the womb. I knew you before I formed you in the womb. That means he knew me before he formed me in the womb. He knew you before he formed you in the womb. And then he clothed you. And now we can look back on it and we can say exactly what the psalmist said. This is how it happened. Well, what about the aborted people? Well, they can't say that because they were murdered. Their life was taken from the earth. They were put to death. And this sophistry of, well, abortion's new, it's never happened before, we don't have anything in the scriptures to really convey it, that's all just, again, human wisdom and human sophistry makes very little sense at all. And, of course, we always have to fall back on this. If I don't know, I leave it alone. And therefore, abortion is evil, and it is wrong. And it is the same exact set of circumstances that the idolatrous nations before us have practiced. And it's just come to light again. So the rationalizations of abortion, it's a right of a woman over her body or a right of a woman to choose. And of course we always respond, well, what about the rights of the unborn child? I mean, there's a lot of argumentation going on right now about white supremacy and how some people think that they're above other people and that some people think that because of the color of their skin or because of their wisdom or because of their culture or because of their nationality, they should have the right to decree this group of people should not live. And we are appalled at that and we are disgusted with that and we are angered with that. And yet, when we hear the same things argued here, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, a woman has a right to kill her child. But a white man doesn't have the right to kill a black man, or a non-Jew doesn't have the right to kill a Jew. What's the difference, brethren? What is the difference, principally speaking? They're all disgusting. And this is also disgusting. And it's interesting how you can see the visceral response of someone who thinks abortion is fine and then finds out, well, there's some white supremacy going on here and they're looking down on black people and boy, that makes me angry and I see red now. Why don't you see the same red when they're doing exactly the same thing to that child? But you see, it's all in how you present it and how you see it and how you look at it. And I think that both of them are just as disgusting as they can be. So what kind of science is this? And of course, it's not science at all. The sad reality is, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this because it's just basically the re-giving of what we said earlier, but America has learned to sacrifice her children to her gods. We now imitate the heathen. The chief practice of their religion, fornication. Fruit of fornication, children. What do we do with children of fornication? Since we're idolaters and idolaters make their own rules as they go along, they decide to offer up these children to the same gods they're worshiping through acts of fornication. Now, how is it any different what we're doing today than what they were doing back then? And the answer is, there isn't. So, I think we've answered the question. Abortion is not new. It's just a new form of something that men have been doing since long, long, long ago. And so verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. If that's true, and I believe it is, then abortion was in ancient times before us. And if that's true, then these human sophistry arguments that are being made about life not starting in the womb is just as false as it can be. And so these are the things I think that we all need to think about. And I think that the same disgust that we feel over genocide and the same disgust that we feel over one culture or one group of people prejudicially looking down on another is how we should feel with abortion. Because they're doing the same thing to unborn children that makes people so angry when it's done in other situations. And so as we now prepare to sing the song of encouragement, I know really this evening we haven't really said anything. I don't believe anybody here is guilty of an abortion. I guess if you are and you can see what you've done, maybe you would need to come forward this evening and take care of that. But we all need our Savior. And something might have been said this evening that has touched your heart in one way or another. And if that be the case and we can help you in any way, we would invite you to come now while we together stand and sing.